Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bat Trucker Podcast. I'm James Rooster Bowen. And before we get started, I want to thank OTR Solutions for sponsoring this podcast. Their factoring program solution has taken supporting trucking companies to a whole new level. We're about to do a whole podcast on everything these guys bring to the table and the success stories to come from working with them. But for now, head on over to otrsolutions.com/BTU to learn more, connect with their dedicated BTU team. Justin, how are you doing today, sir?
All right, I'm fighting off a cold, but, you know, just take your medicine and get over it.
Yeah, well, it's that time of the year. Well, today we're back with our friends OTR Solutions and one of their great clients, Clayton Rams, the president and co-founder of C5 Expedite and C5 Logistics. They're a carrier and brokerage company. Clayton, how are you doing today?
James, I'm doing wonderful. Doing wonderful. Thanks for having me on here. And Justin, honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, we like to every once in a while bring on a good guest, somebody that's, you know, has a great success story to talk about, building their business up and, you know, thriving in the market environment we're facing with today. How did you get your business started, you know, and how have you, grew it over the years?
You know, James, we started with one truck. I think it's important to know that we are an expedited carrier, so that's our specialty. And what that means is our fleet consists of sprinter vans, cargo vans, and straight trucks. And so we, just like everybody, we started with one truck. And I was driving for another carrier actually out of Ohio. And my family has been in business. I've had different businesses. And I was looking for something to do. It was a low barrier of entry there for us, being under 10,000 pounds at 10,000 GVW. So it's easy for me to get into, and honestly, just I love being over the road. So I was a first driver, and actually my dad and I are 50-50 partners. And so he said, hey, if you want to start a business, I'll help you start.
How is that's funny, because my dad and I were actually looking into starting something like that similarly when we were driving together. And at the time, we were driving for a company that hauled military freight. And we approached our boss and said, hey, you know, we'd like to buy a van and haul the same freight. And he kind of nixed the idea, because the way that they make their money is we drove drom trains, basically a flatbed trailer with, you know, 5, 6, 7 dromatory boxes on there. So the more loads you can haul, the more money you're raking in.
Absolutely.
How is driving a smaller vehicle impacted, you know, your earnings potential, or are the lows that you're looking at completely different than what you would see on a typical freight board for a full trailer?
Yeah, I would say that it's a very niche market, and it's we still do use some load boards, but it's a much smaller volume of freight than looking at a DAT board. As for revenue, what's great about us is we don't have the DOT regulations under 10,000 pounds. Of course, we do make sure our drivers are healthy and still pass DOT physicals and have a good driving record. But although it's smaller revenue per load, we are able to drive more miles without the logbook, which has really been fantastic.
Yeah, correct me if I'm mistaken. What I've read on this before is, like, you don't need a commercial driver's license to be driving these vehicles, but you do need a medical card. Is that how that works?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So
it's interesting. Yeah.
Under 10,000 pounds is almost not even considered a commercial vehicle, pertaining to the DOT. But of course, for all other aspects, we want to protect ourselves regardless, and the drivers, of course.
Mm-hmm. Now, I always like that term expedited. So these are, you know, we call them hotshot loads. What are, like, some of the typical loads you guys are hauling? Are you on a dedicated lane, or is it just some factory somewhere has an emergency and they need their part yesterday, and that's where you guys show up?
So the way we work, we have owner operators now. We've got about 75 owner operators that are nationwide. And so we work with a whole array of customers. Typically, working with customers, expedited is a very small portion of their freight. And so it's caused us to have a large amount of customers to fulfill all of our trucks, to fulfill loading all of our trucks. But I would say mostly it's auto parts. We do work with customer that do some dedicated stuff for Daimler, which is connected with Mercedes. So I wouldn't say there's much dedicated freight when it comes to expedited. It's usually very last minute, but from time to time, customers do like having the same carrier on their shipment just to provide consistency and transparency from their end.
Yeah, auto parts are like, you know, everybody's short on parts right now. So anybody who can get their parts to them faster, you know, that's definitely in high demand. So congratulations on scoring that.
Absolutely.
How have you hooked up with OTR Solutions?
Yeah, so OTR Solutions, we got connected with them just a couple of years ago. We originally started out with another company. I won't say their name, but we just had a very poor experience with them. And when we wanted to leave, they wanted to give us troubles and try to figure out how we wouldn't be able to and really tie up our cash, our capital, because they have, I don't know if the right wording here, but first right of refusal, or they're buying our invoices. So it's basically having a lien on us, so we can't collect payment. They have to collect it for us. Mm. So when we're at the mercy of them, that can be pretty scary. But we did come across OTR and Jonathan McCormick, super easy to work with, and kind of in a very stressful time with this other company, they did make it pretty smooth. And what we love about working with OTR is that I would say most of the time these smaller companies will work with OTR, and as people get larger, they try to steer away from that. But for us, it's allowed us to not ever have a cash flow problem, and we want to pay our drivers weekly, which I think they appreciate as well.
Yeah, Rooster, you can probably drill down on that, you know, trying to get paid.
Yeah, me being the owner operator guy, suspicions of who you're talking about are abound. But not only are you a president, co-founder of C5 Expedite, you're also part of C5 Logistics. You're also your own broker. How is that relationship advantageous, especially now in the AB5 environment, California, where, you know, there's not going to be much of a, not going to be independent contractors anymore?
Right. Honestly, short answer is holding my breath. Not sure how it's going to play out. With the brokerage side, it is nice because it kind of gives us both sides of the perspective. Carriers, I think, can get frustrated with the brokers and vice versa. So having both gives us a lot of visibility, and they work very hand in hand together. So hard to say what the future is going to hold with that new ruling in California and how that'll affect other states.
Do you currently have drivers in California right now?
No. So we make sure that we don't. No owner operators. They can drive to California, but they're not based or licensed in California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been talking about AB5 for a while now. We our opinion is basically it's just the wrong tool. Like, we totally get what problem they're trying to solve, but it's too broad. It's too all encompassing, and it's just gonna it's sucking up too many things that aren't related to it right now.
Right.
As we're seeing.
Absolutely. It's pretty unfortunate.
So you've been a client OTR for about 2 years now. What advice would you have for other carriers that are not happy with their factoring companies and looking for a change? You know, we always tell people, you know, to, you know, shop around, use your best judgment, ask other opinions from drivers and business owners that use the company you're thinking about. You know, we've heard nothing but great things from OTR Solutions and all their clients. What advice would you have for somebody that is having issues? You know, like you were saying, you know, that's trying to use your outstanding bills due as a, you know, hostage tactic.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Working with OTR, I would say they're very customer driven, which makes it very pleasant to work with. And they do have experience working with other factoring companies, and what happens is there's typically a buyout, and so they'll buy the invoices from the other factoring company. And so if you feel nervous or frustrated or stressful, OTR does have the experience to guide you through that and what the steps look like to get transitioned over to them.
And how long have you been partnered with OTR?
So we've been partnering with OTR. I believe it's going on 4 years now that we've been with them.
Hmm. Yeah, the first 6 months, I can understand, you know, everyone's kind of nervous about seeing how things work out, but it's really hard to fleece somebody for 4 years straight and not get caught.
Right.
So I'm glad to hear you guys are going strong for 4 years and hope for many, many more.
For sure. Absolutely.
Where do you hope to see your company going forward here? Speaking of which, with OTR in the future, are you wanting to expand? Like, do you want to hire more drivers, or just, you know, maybe get into, you know, more actual commercial vehicles, or are you just kind of comfortable staying in your lane, so to speak?
So when it comes to our own fleet, we do want to stick to the under 10,000 GVW. It works well for us. And then on the brokerage side, we will really broker anything from anywhere from a cargo van up to a dry van, a flatbed. We've done some air expedite shipments. As growing with OTR, I would say we're very satisfied and don't have any reason to leave or any kind of timetable with them. And as long as they continue to be generous with us on the rate we've negotiated, which they have been, happy to stick with them.
We hear this talking point all the time and throughout the trucking industry of a quote unquote driver shortage, being that you're in the smaller vehicles. How hard or easier has it been for you to find drivers?
Yeah. So the interesting for us is that I feel like the CDL drivers, commercial vehicle license drivers, is very challenging. I think it's a very needed thing. For us, not needing that, very easy barrier to entry with us. So we are able to, we get quite a lot of recruits, and we've got a very efficient recruiting department that do a really good job. Because there's not DOT restrictions on our vehicles, we have to put in place our own restrictions, that being their driving record, the state they're in, their health and physical. We have to monitor different things. So we have to kind of take it upon ourselves because we don't have those same DOT restrictions. And we also do inspections, and we're working on getting cameras in the vehicle. So I would say the more challenge for us is having such an array of drivers, because it's easy entry, and having to put in these things in place to make sure that these drivers have experience and will be safe on the road.
And do they typically stick around? Because, you know, our counter to that talking point narrative is always, there's not really a driver shortage, it's a driver retention problem. So you got mega carriers that have, you know, turnover rates of over 150% in some places. How's the turnover for you guys?
The turnover is something we've been working on. We have had an issue with it in the past, and we've hired some additional people to, and have made a lot of changes in how to make the driver more aware of kind of what they're getting into. Can look great on from the front end, but we've tried to, with driver retention, make them more aware so they don't have to feel frustrated with dispatch because maybe they don't fully understand how they operate, or maybe there's a lack of communication from dispatch. So I know drivers out on the road being by themselves, you're constantly dealing with different people and emotions, and so it's
well, just like being a commercial driver, you can have all the holiday plans and family trips and stuff you want, but, you know, if you're 3,000 miles from home, you know, you have to put those plans on hold.
Right.
Because you guys aren't driving, like, you know, sleeper berths or anything, what's like the typical length of travel for some of these loads?
So the drivers do typically in the Sprinter vans, they do kind of a Murphy bed style. So where their bed will flip up behind the driver's seat there, and which will allow them to, of course, sleep, and maybe not as comfortable as a sleeper berth. And so they will time to time.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah. Maybe so.
Those mattresses can be pretty thin, aren't they, Rooster?
Yeah. talking about the vans, you know, this whole big electric vehicle push. Have you been looking into that, you know, seeing what the options are, possibly like looking into purchasing like some liquid natural gas, liquid propane power trucks, possibly, you know, if some of these electric, battery electric vehicles ever get their trucks on the road, looking at some of those options coming from, I believe it's GM that may be running a electric van here pretty soon.
I haven't been aware of electric van, but I know it's coming, and really hard to say. I think we're a long ways from fully replacing the what we currently have. I feel like we're a long ways from it. It's yes, it's out there, but it's a very small percentage at this point, and so I'm kind of just waiting to see if it's successful. I feel like that's what is happening now. They're kind of testing it out to see, okay, is this something that's going to work? Is this a better option? And so we'll kind of wait and see what happens for us.
Yeah, I don't see the infrastructure in place for, I mean, everything we're seeing now is commuters, you know, it's all cars. But as far as like delivery vans and delivery trucks, you're either going to have to stop at chargers along the way, or hope that whatever shipper or receiver you're going to has somewhere for you to plug in and charge. Then you got to also consider all the other vehicles that are waiting to charge in front of and behind you too. So
that's right.
Yeah, we're still, I still think we're a long ways away from anything like that getting up off the ground.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How's the change in the freight cycle been for you? We're coming off the, you know, the big mountaintop of $5 a mile freight, you know, capacity being tight. Now we're down in the bottom. I believe the day I saw average $1.95 a mile, and you know, gasoline's coming down, but not really as fast as it should. But diesel's still climbing. You know, we're seeing averages of, I believe it was 523, 528 was last reported. How's those changes affected you in the way your business has been here the last couple of years?
Yeah, so you guys, I'm sure, have noticed, but April 1, it just kind of took a dive. We were strong there right after the lockdowns up until the first quarter of this year, but April 1, it was kind of a – we actually had a record month for both businesses in March, and April 1 was kind of a shock to us. And here we're in October. It definitely does make a difference, and a lot of guys have gotten into the industry, and – definitely a lot of shifting and changing, and it certainly has affected us. I think everyone's situation is a little bit different. We've actually been bringing on more owner operators, I think, because what their current solution is isn't working for them, and so they do enjoy the market and they want to stay in the market. And so I think drivers are looking for different opportunities with medium and larger sized companies to continue to run freight. And that's what's happening for us.
You know, these are guys that were already running sprinter operations themselves, and they're just signing on with you guys, or are these guys coming from, you know, large commercial trucks and stepping down into the expedited freight?
They typically are already in the sprinter van business, and so coming over to our fleet.
Yeah, I really need to start looking into these guys again. Back probably, I think November last year, I was looking at some YouTube channels of guys that it was so good at the time that you could literally just rent a pickup truck and haul freight that way. And then guys were making a killing doing that. I can't imagine any of these guys are still doing that today.
Certainly. Yeah, it's tough. It's been tough.
You know, and our CEO, Craig's been, you know, on fire in the last couple of months, because all he's been doing is you just look at the data and you see this freight recession coming, and people start calling Chicken Little, thinking he was, you know, all doom and gloom. But when you see the rate of freight plummeting off a cliff coming from China, you know, that's obviously going to have impacts on freight here. Were you guys paying attention to this, or did this all catch you off guard like everybody else not paying attention?
I would say it caught us off guard, especially after having a record month in April 1. I really felt like April 1 fell off a cliff. On a positive side. We try to look at things, of course, as optimistic and positive as possible. The freight industry is it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And so we're small to medium size carrier and broker. And I feel like even in a downturn, it will, we still have a lot of room to grow and kind of gives us an opportunity to grab more market share, looking at different ways that we can differentiate ourselves from others. I try to look at it as a opportunity.
How useful is the tools for your drivers OTR solutions have available for them? They have their fuel card program, their instant funding program where they can get paid as soon as the bill's done. Your Sprinter van, I don't know if you got too much with lumpers other than maybe like do they even have like forklift fees to pay to get loaded, unloaded? How useful has tools OTR's disposal been for your drivers?
Actually, our drivers that I'm aware of haven't used the OTR in that fashion. What we do, our model is that OTR, we work directly with OTR and take care of the back office stuff with our drivers. And if they need any type of advances, we take care of that from our end. As for fuel cards, So good question. Though. I should look more into that for our drivers.
All right.
Rooster thinks about all this stuff because he's coming from the owner operator, and I was always a company driver, so I never had to think about any of this stuff.
It's important.
Well, I got a small amount of knowledge on expediting. You know, I was a Landstar BCO for about 3 years, and they have their expedited division, which I learned a little bit about. Most of you guys do auto parts for Daimler, Mercedes Benz. Are any of them in the like white glove specialized, very high tense of sensitive freight?
Yeah, we do a lot of that with our broker side. A lot of white glove or team service, lift gate teams, white glove service for sure. We do a lot of that, a fair amount of that.
Yeah, that's what my dad and I were looking into because the benefits of doing that kind of, first of all, that stuff pays a lot better. You're going into like some cool areas, it's a lot of fun, like going into a museum, picking up fine art at a museum and making sure it gets to its destination all in one piece. But you also have the benefit of, being in a smaller vehicle, you can park the thing anywhere. And we're seeing all kinds of news today about truck driver shortages, truck parking shortages. There's 11 trucks for every one spot available. Definitely not a problem for you guys, I imagine.
We do still run into it from time to time because there are a fair amount of sprinters on the road, and then these guys are sharing spaces with people that might be driving an RV. So we can run into it still from time to time, and especially hot areas. Not sure if it's the same level.
I'd imagine too, depending on where you're at, the van has, commercial markings all over it, and they try to chase those guys off anyway. We would see that all the time. We park at a Walmart somewhere, and within 5 minutes of you getting out of the truck, the manager's already coming up to you. Hey, you got to move. And it's like, I'm doing some shopping here, man. Yeah, but they don't chase the RVs away. They gotta chase away the trucks.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah.
If you have some kind of biz company or commercial, they can tell that it's commercial. They're chasing you out of there, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, coming off the tail end of the COVID pandemic, we saw at the big onset just the massive amounts of PPE being shipped, masks, gloves, supplies. How much business were you getting off of that in the expedited market?
I would say that turned for a period of time, that was maybe 10 to 20% of our business. As a lot of other companies shut down or transitioned to PPE gear, I would say, and honestly, could have been even more for a period of time there. It was such a necessary thing.
It's funny how you can always tell the importance of what's breaking down based on like what everybody's hauling. So in the beginning it was PPE because that's what everybody was wanting. And then now we're seeing with the supply chain issues, nobody's buying new equipment anymore. Or if they're trying to buy used equipment, the used equipment was going up. Now it's going down a little bit. But now parts, everything's parts, parts, parts. And so I imagine parts are, like you said earlier, you know, parts are a big part of your business now.
It is, yeah. A lot of auto parts delivering to. So a lot of people think that GM makes the entire vehicle there in Michigan, but there's a lot of different companies that do things for GM. So we're delivering to a lot of those places that are connected to GM and could be in Kentucky, Tennessee, Indiana. I think the truckers know that, but if you're not aware of that, people think that trucks made in Michigan.
If you haven't gone to otrsolutions.com/BTU yet, here's your reminder. I'm not sure how to say it, but factoring these guys just makes sense. They're focused on driving your success and helping you grow your company. They've gone as far as offering custom business email address setups so you can negotiate better rates with brokers. There's just so much opportunity out there, and OTR is your ticket to success. So head on over to otrsolutions.com/BTU and check out their solutions.
Yeah, one of my first introductions in being educated on how that works was I was driving team with this guy, and we went to a plastic bead factory in Kentucky. Outside his hometown, and they make like the little tiny pellets. And what we did with that stuff is we took it from Kentucky to Compton, California, where it gets put on a shipping container and then sent overseas to Korea, where it's smashed together and makes quarter panels for Kias. And then those same shipping containers that they send the plastic over with are then loaded up with completed cars and then sent back into Compton from Kia or from Korea.
Wow.
So it's really cool to see how like a town in Kentucky is responsible for making the parts that go into building a vehicle in Korea, and then it's brought all over. Now that went on perfectly for decades, and then COVID kind of threw sand in the gears, and we're watching it all grind to a screeching halt. But
it's very fascinating for guys like
you come in, because then you're it's all interconnected. That's why when you see volume, say in China, dropping off a cliff, you know that, you know, in a few months' time, that's going to impact us here. What do you see? Are you paying attention to anything right now that's going to be impacting you in the future that you're ready to take head on?
I really don't have an answer for that question.
If you do, you would know. Be a very wealthy man.
it's hard to say what's going on in China and Asia. But it certainly does affect us. A couple months time, and it's here it comes. You don't want to. Yeah. You see it happen, and you don't want to believe it. A couple months happen, and here we're feeling it.
Rooster, what was like your first like aha moment when you realized like, oh, all of this really is just like one big chain? Like, what was something you picked up that you would never even have thought of, and you realized, oh, it's going to impact something on the other side of the world?
I think it was probably the first time I picked up like bulk copper off of Port of Panama City Beach, Florida. You know, that copper had come from South America, and I was like, why are we sourcing copper from South America when we got copper mines in here in the U.S. And you know, that's kind of like my first big step into, you know, this is a whole big world, whole big set of gears. And one gear starts turning, it forces the rest of the gears to turn. And, you know, if you get one gear breaks a tooth off, it starts hiccuping everything along the chain, you know?
Mm-hmm. I would see that all the time in Florida during hurricane seasons. So grocery stores in Florida, most people don't know this, but if they're built before the 1980s, the insides of the stores are very small, but then the back storage areas are huge. And today it's the complete opposite. They want giant open spaces inside the stores with very, very, very little back stock, because what they want is everything ordered on demand. You know, if you have a couple of cases of water left on your shelf, no problem. You just scan it with your scanner gun and it shows up on the next truck. But then every hurricane season, everything just gets wiped. And so when people come in and they're asking us, do you have anything in the back? Do you have anything in the back? It's like, nope, everything you see is what we got. But then like to prepare, like if we knew a storm was coming and we had a couple of weeks notice, they would just have pallets upon pallets of water, toilet paper, you name it, all throughout the stores. So that was like even before a truck, being a truck driver, I kind of got like a hint a small taste of like how the supply chain operates. But, you know, once you're actually the one moving the pieces around, you really see just how completely interconnected everything is.
It's amazing. And even what's fascinating is every trucker or owner operator or company has their own experience. And we're only a very small part of it. And you guys have different experiences, and it's kind of enjoyable to hear how everybody, how each person operates or what they haul or what they do or what they're seeing. It seems everybody's got a different story, which is cool.
Do you have one that you can share? Like, what was your first, like, oh, we got to get this over here so that this stuff can keep moving?
I would say for us, being expedited, we've hauled kind of some unique different things. It's like, oh, well, I never thought of that. Well, what would they need that for? One of those for us was we delivered to Tyson Foods, and they just needed a little small part that maybe the part cost $1,000 or something, and they had no problem paying a premium rate for it to be shipped, because for Tyson Foods, they could have $100,000 of meat on the line, and they were shut down mm-hmm. waiting for the part.
Yeah.
I go on these hotshot forums all the time. That's all I hear about. That's exactly what those guys do. It's like, factory A needs widget XYZ. Otherwise, it's, you know, bazillion dollars worth of product on the line that they're going to miss if they don't get it out because, you know, shopping season, whatever, is just around the corner.
Right.
And if they don't have it moving, you know, it's, you're talking people losing their jobs at that point, really.
We also,
they're not going to pay people to stand around and do nothing while they're waiting on the part. You know, they need that part yesterday.
Right. 100%. We also have been doing a lot of work with the railroads, and, you know, they can't get from Omaha to Chicago overnight. And so, they have different rail yards, and so we've been hauling parts for them between different rail yards, and that's kind of been fascinating as well, just to be of support to the rail cars.
We had a previous guest on here who was a rail worker, Joey Cobb, and one of the things that struck out to me was how a lot of these trains are operating on just two-man crews right now. And like, so if we're in a truck and you get a flat tire and you pull over, you got to wait for road service to come out and replace the tire. But he's like, if you're driving a 2 mile long train and cart 50% down the track breaks down, you got to stop the train, get out, walk down there, fix it, and then walk all the way back up to the front car again. And I was like, yeah, no, thank you. I'll stick to driving a truck.
Can haul a lot more freight with the rail, but you're moving a lot slower. And if things like that happen.
Well, and I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news this week, but there's a problem with the rivers right now. The rivers are so low that the barges are stuck. And just like how trains move more freight, but they're slower than trucks, barges move even more freight than that, and they're even slower. But now they're pretty much, you know, stuck because of the river. Yeah. So, yeah, it's never a dull moment in the supply chain.
When things are going good, and when things were going good with really everybody, and everybody was getting in to the industry, it was, it's like, hey, how long is this going to last? It feels like it can last forever. And now that we're in a downturn, that feels like that can last forever. So I think it's just a good reminder mm-hmm. to that. Nothing lasts forever, and the freight cycle is going to keep moving.
What was like the first thing that caught you guys off guard that you weren't expecting?
Our current customers were just not sending as much freight need or demand, which of course, real quickly can drive rates down when you get overcapacity. And working off the spot market, most of our freight is spot market, so working off that, it can really affect the rates rather quickly.
Yeah, Brewster's more of the sonar expert than I am, but yeah, when I see some of the graphs put out by our guys, I'm like, oh god, it just keeps getting lower and lower and lower.
How low can it go?
And it has nowhere. Well, got nowhere else to go because there's still too many carriers out there. I think.
Right.
Too many people came. Too many people came on when times are great, and either times aren't bad enough for them to run out, or everyone's just kind of hoping that this is like a temporary thing.
Well, watch, see, there's two big cycles in the hiring and firing. There's the company driver slash fleet cycle, which runs about every 3 to 4 years. Whenever rates go up, everybody wants to get into trucking. So you get the a mass influx of new companies, new MC dot numbers, people coming in, not just drivers, you know, new brokerages, new companies, new owner operators. And now that the rates have tanked, you know, because we got too many companies, you know, supply and demand, you know, basically all supply and demand, you got not enough freight to handle all these companies, then the companies that can't get freight, they're going to start starving off. And we start the getting to the cycle of fleet cannibalization, which we're seeing not only at the low level, but at the, you know, at the mega carrier level. We've seen some really big names getting balled up that you would never thought they would be interested in each other. But, you know, here goes. But also about every 7 years, there's this big owner operator cycle. And guess what? We're into that owner operator cycle where the, you know, the one truck to seven truck owner operators, they're starting to fall off. And that usually follows the fuel price cycle. Well, when diesel fuel is over $5 a gallon, you're not getting barely $2 a mile. Guess what? What do you have after you have the bills? Barely enough to put food on the table. That pushes owner operators to want to start going back to the companies. And the mega carriers are leave trucking in general, you know, try to find a local job around the house. So, you know, that's the kind of situation we're in right now with that. And it's basically survival of the fittest.
Yeah, we're seeing like a merger between two large trucking companies every, like, what, 3 weeks now?
2 weeks, 3 weeks.
I've noticed that as well.
2 weeks, yeah. And like some big ones too. Like, I'm not talking like, you know, Schneider and Werner or anything, but it's definitely like big one gobbling up medium sized ones.
Yeah.
And the smaller ones just pack up shop and go away. And that's why I try to tell these guys that are just kind of, you know, brushing it aside, like, oh, you know, we've been through this, been through that. Like, no, unless you're in like a really niche market with a really good lane, you know, you're going to be hurting like everybody else if you're not paying attention here. What warnings or advice do you have for like other companies, you know, trying to survive this right now?
I'll answer that if you just give me 2 seconds to just really think, think about it.
It's a tough question.
$1 million question. You know? Advice I give to other carriers trying to survive in this type of market would be work on building a strong carrier base. I think having a strong carrier base is really the key to stomach any kind of storm. As we know, all the rates are going up for insurance, especially if you're new, might have, and then fuel costs, factoring costs. So there's so many different costs, and it's very frustrating when rates seem to be going down. But having a customer base that instead of fighting with 100 carriers trying to get one load, maybe you're only bidding against 5 other carriers. So your chances of winning that shipment goes up significantly. So that's what's been helpful for us, finding more of, and sometimes even the smaller, working with smaller brokers can be better for us as a carrier, because there's just more loyalty and they have a smaller carrier base versus working with mega brokers, big companies. They have such a large carrier base, and if you don't fit within that box or get, they're looking for the lowest rate. If you don't meet the lowest rate, you're not getting the shipment. So we found that some of our best customers are actually the smaller companies. And we've been able to build strong relationships in that sorts.
Yeah. The relationships are critical because, you know, they don't just see you as numbers on the board. It's like, oh, it's Clayton. We know Clayton, you know, we can work with Clayton. And that's super important in troubling times.
I think another tactic we've been using is just trying to follow up. Of course, there's when you work with so many different companies, sometimes you can forget, hey, we haven't seen many requests from this customer. And so we've gone back to even the last 2 years of who have we worked with and what do they have for availability. And sometimes they just need a reminder of your company, or they need to be reminded that, hey, we're still here. You guys, how you guys doing, and so that's been key for us as well. Also, we actually just had our quarterly meeting here this last Saturday, and we haven't launched it yet, but we're discussing a program because when we go in to build sales or bring on new customers, there's so many carriers and brokers that they feel, okay, well, we don't know what your communication is. We don't know how you guys operate. And so they typically just want to shoo you off because they're getting a call the next day. And so we want to begin offering a guarantee, or it's free model, and for new customers. So just so that we can build the, it's not necessarily an easy task for us maybe to do, but it allows new customers to get a flavor of our services, and which definitely pay off in the long run if we have to take care of something. And typically we have a very high on-time delivery, but it's just an extra kind of offer to new customers to get a flavor of our services. So we're hoping to launch that here real soon.
Modern problems require modern solutions.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
So how do the drivers fit into this situation like that? Are they, so as drivers, our favorite way of being basically managed is what I call decentralized ownership. You know, you're hired, you're a professional, here's a job, here's what's expected of you, go do it. And then if you don't meet certain standards, then we have to bring you in and take corrective action and go forward. But what we see with like a lot of mega carriers is it's just micromanaging like every little thing. I mean, you have cameras in the trucks and cameras facing in the cab, and you know, the tablet's beeping at you, and your dispatcher's texting you and calling you and stuff. They're not letting you just do the work. Is that how you handle your drivers, or are you guys more of like on the micromanage side?
We are looking into this service actually that will allow us to communicate better with our driver. Currently, we use a centralized phone number that they can call or text at any time, and somebody's always monitoring that. But what we want to do is we want to have a solution that the driver can better communicate with dispatch. With 75 drivers, it's can be a lot to manage, and we want to make sure we're fulfilling just open line of communication to our drivers. I spent some time on the road, and it's sometimes it's tough, especially if you got things going on back home. It's nice to have open line of communication for the drivers. My dad often brings up a story that sometimes drivers feel like they're throwaway people, and we want to make sure that that's not the case, because it's that's America. America runs on it, and it's very necessary. And each job really is fulfilling different parts of the supply chain. So we've been trying to invest more into communication with our drivers and invest into, like we talked earlier, retention, so the driver feels comfortable and that they can continue to operate.
Last time we were at OTR Solutions, we had a little fun with Justin. We sat down, set up J-Mart Trucking. Well, today let's have a little fun again. Let's set up J-Mart Expedited. So, right. Clayton, how would Justin get into the expedited business? Let's start off with the basis. How is he going to get himself a Sprinter van?
How's he going to get himself a Sprinter van? Well, I would work with a local, typically a local dealer, commercial dealer. There's different types of vans, whether it's a Mercedes or Ford makes a Ford Transit, Dodge, they've got their model. And now what you can do.
Nissan even has one.
Oh, that's right. Nissan has one. So it's really preference. I would say do your research on what you like. There's different dimensions and designs. And what's cool is there are companies that then will take the chassis for you. If you order the chassis, they can put a custom box on the back there to give more room for whether it's sleeping or more room for freight. So So you have this, the, say the Ford Transit chassis, but you've got a little bit larger box for your benefit. So definitely recommend looking into things like that.
All right, so I got this nice souped up Sprinter van. How do I start making money with it?
How do you start making money with it? The expedite industry, it's such a niche market. It's kind of a hush hush. If you don't know about it, it's people won't tell you what to do. So I'll be careful what I say here, but I'd recommend spending some time signing on with a carrier. It is a little bit different than driving a big rig, of course. So I always recommend getting experience with a carrier to make sure it's something you enjoy, something you like, before fully investing into it. And if it is something you love, I recommend investing into it, because it's never a dull moment and it's enjoyable.
Going into the cost of doing business, you know, insurance is a massive part of OTR trucking. You have your bobtail insurance, you have your laden insurance, additional cargo insurance, which we're seeing a lot of drivers and a lot of different companies not have enough insurance to cover the cargo. And guess what? Cargo gets stolen, cargo gets damaged beyond reclamation. That's got to get paid out of the insurance account. What types of insurance is there involved in expedited? I know you're not dealing with a 70-foot tractor trailer with 80,000 pounds of weight. How much are those premiums? You know, we have the congressionally mandated $2 million policy for the insurance now to deal with. Is there a mandated insurance amount for Sprinters?
Typically, the requirements come from the broker or the customer. So, of course, you get your $100,000 in cargo. And so you may not have the requirements from the DOT, but you will have requirements from your customers to meet those needs. And insurance premiums can be, in the Sprinter van business, anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 a unit annually. Just for general liability, and you get cargo, and we've now recently, our insurance agent recommended that we get an overage, because the standard fatal crash is now $2 million. And so this year, yeah, we've just got that overage to make sure we're covered. And it's unfortunate, but it's something to, just for protection, that I recommend to anybody. I wasn't aware of that. And getting as for insurance, I would highly recommend working with an agent that has experience in the trucking industry. And there's a lot of them that do. We worked with a small carrier, small insurance agent. And of course, we were a small carrier at the time, but we worked with a local agent. And as we've grown, we needed further expertise, and so we've very, very thankful that we've found that, not only to make sure you have the right coverage, but to potentially get better rates, and for future, if you want to grow and plan to grow, there's other insurance to consider.
And one thing we always want to bring up, cargo insurance. You know, there was that, you know, crime of the century robbery out in California where the Brinks truck was robbed, mm-hmm, of, you know, multiple millions of dollars of jewelry, and the vendors that owned the jewelry only had like the statutory minimum, like $100,000 policy, but here they got 10 times, 100 times the value being robbed. And, you know, drivers need to take into account, you know, if I'm hauling, you know, just a couple of pallets of paper bags or boxes, you know, that's regular freight, you don't have to worry about it. But if you get like a specialized load, like a medical load, that could, you know, be, you know, run up into the hundreds of thousands or $1 million of medication, or aircraft parts, which would be, you know, several tens of thousands of dollars. Make sure to have the right amount of insurance in case something happens, you know, and, you know, God forbid an accident and that cargo gets messed up and you got to, you know, handle that replacement. But,
can I jump in here?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I think it's important for carriers to know that when you are doing high value shipments that your entire policy doesn't have to change to that, that you can get insurance just for that specific run or that specific customer. That's important to understand as well. So maybe that you need that coverage for 2-3 days while that shipment's being done, but then you're able to notch that back down. And if you're working with a good agent,
temporary riders,
right?
I'm glad I never had to handle any of that stuff, because, you know, not me personally, the company I was driving for, but when I was hauling the munitions, we would run into other Sprinter van operations, and they would tell us other places they'd been. And, you know, some of these guys also haul pharmaceuticals, fine art and stuff. And I'm just like, the insurance premiums on those loads must be astronomical, but you need them. You know, you'd rather have it than not have it. Like Rooster said, God forbid something happens.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Clayton, you have any advice for new drivers thinking about coming into the business? You know, is expedited looking good toward the future, being a profitable business, or would you recommend them try to find a company to work for instead of going in by themselves as an owner op?
I would definitely recommend going into working with another company before putting your life savings or investing big dollars into it, because it is a big investment, and you want to make sure you're protecting yourself and that you enjoy it. I think going forward, expedited is a great niche to get into, because like you guys were saying, people want it now. They want it on demand, and I think only more of that's gonna keep coming here. So I think the need will definitely be there.
Awesome. Clayton, where can people find out more about your company and about you on the social media?
Yeah, we have a website. It's C5. So the letter C, number 5, C5Expedite.com. We also do have a Facebook page and Instagram that we regularly post different articles there. So welcome to drivers or customers. You can get quotes. You can request to be a part of our newsletter. Or if you're a driver looking for freight, you're welcome to go to our website and go to Google, check out the reviews, and get a hold of us. Love to have you part of the team.
Well, that's going to wrap us up for today. I'm James Roosterbone here with Just Super Trucker Martin and Clayton Dramston of C5 Expedite and C5 Logistics. And we will catch you guys down the road.